50 years ago, three men were convicted over the Salins train robbery. Years later, two were cleared and a third was pardoned after the courts accepted that their convictions were based on confessions that were false and that Gardaí had forced them to sign. But the state has never apologised and there has never been a public inquiry into what happened. Why?
This carefully planned robbery took place at a small farm crossing on the main line between Strafford and Hazel Hatch. Though it's only 11 miles from Dublin, it's a very lonely and remote spot. The crossing, in fact, is only used as a facility for local farmers to cross from one field to another. 2 hours before the robbery, a number of men took over the bungalow belonging to the O'Toole family and disconnected the telephone. The bungalow is beside a gate which leads into the field beside the railway track. The family were confined in a bedroom, and at 3 o'clock they heard detonators exploding. They heard the train stop and then reverse, and a short time later they heard a number of cars driving away. Apparently the raiders drove their cars to the hedge here and waited beside the track for the train to come. Mrs. O'Toole told me the raiders were very polite, and they apologised for causing her and her children any inconvenience.
It's News Talk Daily, I'm Ciara Doherty. In March 1976, a gang stopped a mail train at Salins in County Kildare and stole hundreds of thousands of pounds. Gardaí arrested Oscar Breithneach, Nicky Kelly and Brian McAnally, three men with links to Republican socialist politics. There was no physical evidence connecting them to the robbery. The case rested on these signed confessions. The men said that they'd been beaten, deprived of sleep and threatened by members of what became known as the Garda Heavy Gang. Breithneach and McAnally were freed in 1980 after the Court of Criminal Appeal ruled that their confessions had been obtained under oppression. Kelly, who had been convicted in his absence, was arrested when he returned to Ireland and spent years in prison before being released following a hunger strike. He later received a presidential pardon. The three men received compensation, but without an admission of liability or an apology. Last week, Brian McAnally was laid to rest, while Breithneach and Kelly continue to seek a public inquiry into how they were treated and that Garda investigation. The government say an inquiry is not warranted. Well, Patsy McGarry is a contributor to the Irish Times and he joins us now. Patsy, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you, Ciara.
I think the Salins train robbery is an event, a crime of the 70s that is etched pretty clearly in people's minds. People particularly who lived through that period will remember it. But for those of us who weren't there, who didn't live through it, can you remind people of the details?
Well, the 1970s was a particularly fraught decade in Ireland, mainly because of the eruption of violence in Northern Ireland in the later 1960s and particularly the early 1970s. And there was a strong fear on the part of the government of the day down here that the IRA, who had become very active in Northern Ireland, might begin to undermine the rule of law and indeed the government itself in the South. And as part of their fight back against the IRA, who were conducting robberies all over the country, basically to subsidise their campaign in Northern Ireland and pay for it, there led to the evolution from the murder squad of what became known as the Heavy Gang. And this is a group of hard-nosed Gardaí who were basically licensed to use whatever methods they believed necessary to get confessions out of people believed to be suspected of involvement in crime. And that's where the Salins case basically becomes a real focal point for the activities of that gang. Because that robbery in 1976, 50 years ago, 31st of March last, it was the biggest train robbery in the history of the state. Over 200,000 punts, and we were still dealing in punts at that time, were taken at the time by an armed gang. And the Gardaí rounded up what were called the usual suspects. These were basically demonstrators, agitators, people on the left, socialists, who would be well known to the Gardaí and through the special branches, etc., because of their activities in the city protesting against various Garda measures against events in Northern Ireland, etc. And among them were members of the Irish Republican Socialist Party, like Oscar Breithneach, Nicky Kelly, and the late Brian McAnally. There were others, of course, too. So they were all rounded up. Over 40 people were rounded up after the Salins mail train robbery. And this was sifted down to these men And they were heavily interrogated. I mean, Nicky Kelly was in custody for about 48 hours, 27 hours of which were spent in interrogation by Gardaí. And he reckons he got about 6 hours sleep during that same period. The men emerged black and blue and were brought before the courts in this ragged state and charged. And of course, it went to trial. Now, when the evidence, there was no evidence against these men except their physical condition.
Train slowed down coming to the mile and a half mile post and stopped. I looked out side window. That's the 6 foot way. That's the space between the two tracks. And there was three men running towards the driver. With that, the train reversed back to the mile and a half mile post and stopped. Went over to the other side to see what was wrong, and there was a man standing on the bank, a figure. Couldn't make out a face or anything. It was all black with a rifle pointing at the van. We were in the light and he was in the dark. That's all. We sat down then. We couldn't move till they were finished with us.
Did you hear any of the men speaking?
No, I heard no. And he never opened his mouth. It was one way or another.
Have you any idea what way the men were dressed?
No, only the one man I saw, really. That was the man. He's a balaclava. I presume that's what it was. Down over his chin, his head down to his chin, and his face blackened. That's the man who was standing on the bank with the rifle. That's all we saw, really, like, you know. Only the three men running the other side. We couldn't say what way they were dressed.
And the trial would have been held in the Special Criminal Court. So it was a non-jury trial. It was just in front of three judges.
Correct. And that remained the case because there were two trials in both trials. The men protested that the confessions had been beaten out of them. The medical evidence was presented of wounds on their body to sustain that. But the court, the Special Criminal Court, eventually concluded that basically that they, even though the injuries couldn't be denied, that they were sustained by the men by others or inflicted by others than members of the Gardaí or by each other, because against the rules of the Bridewell, they were put in cells, two men per cell. And in the Bridewell, according to the rules, every individual charge is supposed to be in a separate cell. But there was one exception, Oscar Brannock. Oscar Brannock was so badly injured that he had to be taken immediately to the Jervis Street Hospital, as it was then, such was the extent of his injuries. He had been in the company of nobody but the Gardaí. But basically, the courts basically left people with the conclusion that Oscar Brannock had beaten himself so badly he had to be hospitalised, and it basically couldn't accept that he was beaten by the Gardaí, that would undermine the whole case. Anyhow.
And just to be clear, Patsy, we had this first case, his first trial at the Special Criminal Court, which collapsed after one of the judges died, a judge, I think, who it was reported had been falling asleep on occasion throughout this trial. There was a second trial where this evidence was put forward again, these confessions. So on a second occasion, it was being accepted by the courts.
Yes, and if we might go back to that first trial, Ciara, in 1978, there were three judges hearing the trial, and it was by the time the counsel began to act on the fact that Judge John O'Connor was falling asleep on the bench during the hearings, and they tried everything like calling for toilet breaks and dropping books from a height to waken the man up, and eventually the counsel on behalf of the defence, McEntee, decided, look, this has gone too far, and as a legal matter, he basically said that the judge was falling asleep, and the two fellow judges were absolutely outraged at the suggestion. The three judges retreated and found, as a finding of fact, their colleague was not sleeping. And this went all the way up to the Supreme Court on appeal, and the Supreme Court sustained that decision. And weeks later, Judge O'Connor died, and it transpired that the man had been on medication for a heart condition, a side effect of which was drowsiness. The trial had to be cancelled. The whole thing had to be organised again under three different judges led by Justice Liam Hamilton. And the evidence was presented once more, and that three judge panel decided to accept the confessions as the only evidence as it happened. There was no forensics linking these men to the crime at all as evidence. Now, Nicky Kelly was one of the people in court, and when it was decided by the court to accept the confessions of evidence as evidence, Nicky Kelly knew his goose was cooked. He was an innocent man. He was not going to jail for something he didn't do. So he fled. He went to France first, then to the Netherlands for a period, then to Canada, and through Canada got into the United States. Meanwhile, Oscar Brannock and the late Brian McNally initiated an appeal, and they were successful in the following year on the grounds that the confessions had been elicited from them through oppressive means. And at the same time, the IRA claimed responsibility for the robbery, the first of two times the IRA actually claimed responsibility for it.
In a 10-minute hearing at the four courts, the three appeal judges ordered the two men's release, and so they walked out of the court free, having been brought there in handcuffs by a heavy military and Garda escort. They had served a year and a half of their jail terms in Port Leash prison. Both had pleaded not guilty to robbing the Cork-Dublin mail train near Sallins, County Kildare, 4 years ago. But they were convicted by the Special Criminal Court after the longest trial in the history of the state. Releasing them today, Mr. Justice Finlay said statements they had made were not legally admissible, and the statements were the only evidence produced to establish their involvement in the robbery. Later, at the headquarters of the Irish Republican Socialist Party, officials repeated allegations that the two men had been ill-treated, allegations denied by Gardaí. They also told reporters that the party would be taking legal advice on the constitutionality of the Special Criminal Court. They wanted it abolished. One of those released, Oscar Brannock, said that he now intended taking a civil action against the state.
Nicky Kelly, not unnaturally on hearing this, and being very homesick abroad, he was away from nearly 18 months, decided against legal advice in Ireland and against legal advice in the States. Paul O'Dwyer, the great eminent American lawyer and man, also came from Mayo, like Prime Minister Carney, strictly advised him not to come home, but he did. And as he arrived at Shannon Airport, he was taken to the courts in Dublin and he was sent to Port Leash Jail, where he spent the following 4 years. Appeal after appeal failed. And he went on hunger strike for 38 days and eventually was released on so-called humanitarian grounds by the government of the day. Michael Noonan was then Minister for Justice. And eventually, in 1992, he was pardoned by Mary Robinson as though he'd never been charged in connection with the crime. And he received quite a substantial amount of money. But there was never an admission by the state that there had been a miscarriage of justice with these men. Are concerned. There has never been an inquiry into the by the state into how it was possible for these men to be jailed and to be beaten so badly for something they had nothing to do with.
50 years on, Patsy, as you say, two of the men are still alive. What physical, psychological consequences has this experience had on these individuals?
Well, it's been quite severe. Oscar Brannock talks very frankly about the neurological effect and psychological effect it has on him. Nicky Kelly is currently in and out of hospital, in St. James's Hospital all the time. He's had cancers which are related to the hunger strike. He had esophageal cancer, which they believe is directly related to the hunger strike. And he's living in assisted accommodation while in and out of James's Hospital. So these men have paid a huge price physically for what they went through 50 years ago.
How much time did they spend in prison, Patsy?
Oscar and Brian were in prison for about 18 months and Nicky for 4 years. The extraordinary thing about the Nicky Kelly case is that he was convicted on the same evidence that the other two men were jailed for 18 months and released eventually after an appeal. But he was kept in prison. He was kept in prison because he went on the run during a court proceeding. So that was never ever given as a formal reason. There was never a proper explanation given for why Nicky Kelly was kept in jail for four additional years. None. Never has been.
The state has compensated these men, right, and has accepted their innocence in various ways. But why was there no further acknowledgement of wrongdoing, no apology at the time, do you think?
I wish I could give you an answer to that question, Ciara, because there isn't one. It's staring us in the face that there was a massive injustice done here. It involved personalities and the heavy gang, not to put a tooth in it, who had an extraordinarily bad track record when it came to cases like the Kerry Babies case. A lot of the same personnel were involved in getting Joanne Hayes and her mother and her family to admit to a murder they couldn't possibly have committed of a baby that was found miles and miles away in Carr's IV on a beach there. The same group of Gardaí who were given basically free hand to do whatever they thought necessary to get people they believed, and that was the case, but they believed these people were involved in crime, and it wasn't the case at all. So they have never shown, and the state has never shown any appetite, whatever government you're talking about, to investigate how this could have happened. And I think now, fine, the Gardaí have changed, but an awful lot of damage was done to the credibility of the force in that period because of the activities of this heavy gang, as it was called, and indeed first disclosed by our own paper, the Irish Times, in 1977, in a very courageous piece of journalism, if I might say. But, Jim O'Callaghan, the current Minister for Justice, last March in the Dáil said, no, there was not going to be a public inquiry into this. He said it wasn't warranted. I don't know how he explains that. However, more positively, it has more recently emerged that the DPP will not object to an action being taken by Oscar Brannock to have a miscarriage of justice declared in that case. And there's to be a hearing of the Court of Appeal on the 21st of July next month, where that will probably be acknowledged, where it probably will be accepted by the state that there was a miscarriage of justice. There may even be an apology from the state, but there is no indication by the state that it's going to investigate why or how any of this happened.
So what are the key questions then, Patsy, that an actual full public inquiry could answer for these two men?
Well, to come back, if I might repeat myself, Kira, why and how did this happen? Those two questions need to be answered. And they need to be answered to ensure that a guard or an element within the Gardaí are never allowed to do this thing again for the protection of the citizens of this republic.
And yet, as you say, the Minister of Justice has said, and previous Ministers of Justice have said, you know, that is in the past. This was in the 1970s. There has been obviously a complete change of personnel, a complete change of culture within the Garda. It wouldn't happen today, and that is why it is unwarranted.
Well, that's an expression of confidence that may be warranted today, but how can you guarantee, what are the measures in place to protect people from ensuring this? What are the structures in place to protect the ordinary citizens of Ireland from ensuring that this sort of thing can never happen again, or that an element within the Gardaí can be allowed go rogue? Indeed, they were initially, because we argued that they weren't allowed to go rogue. They were simply instructed by the authorities of the day back in the 1970s, including the leadership of the Garda at the time, Edmund Garvey, the then Garda commissioner, who's since deceased. But, I mean, they literally resorted to illegal means of what they believed to protect the state. Now, we can't be naive about it. Certain measures are necessary to protect the state. But when it involves innocent people being abused and jailed for something that they had nothing to do with and convicted on the basis of actually no evidence whatsoever except forced confessions, then you really have to worry about the protection of the ordinary citizenry in this state from state institutions such as the Gardaí and indeed the courts that sustained all these decisions way up the line where Nicky Kelly in particular was concerned and his various appeals. But also going back to the original incident of the very first trial, when in the face of common sense and common evidence, the courts decided that a man who had been on medication for a heart condition was not sleeping during court proceedings and found out subsequently that, of course, he had been sleeping but wouldn't accept the fact that during the proceedings themselves this was the case. It's mad.
It's interesting because there is support, isn't there, from a variety of quarters for this inquiry. Former Presidents Mary Robinson and Michael D. Higgins have endorsed the call for
and
inquiry.
And Mary McAleese, yeah.
The Irish Council for Civil Liberties, Pat Finucane Centre, yeah. Amnesty International.
Of course, people involved in the Birmingham 6 cases, the Guildford 4 cases in the UK, and there were very close parallels between how the authorities in the UK and the authorities in Ireland handled Guildford, Birmingham 6, and the Nicky Kelly case, as well as the broader Salons case. The parallels were uncanny, particularly in law.
I mean, Brian McNally, as we say, died recently. He was buried last week. There will be no closure for him, no answer for him. Was this something that played on his mind, do we know?
To be fair, not so much on Brian. Brian really went to ground, if you like, and led a very quiet life after he was released. But Oscar has been campaigning consistently since, and so has Nicky Kelly. And that's been rooted in the physical and health consequences both men have suffered as a result of the nature of the interrogations that they went through back in the 1970s.
But they're both now 75 years of age, and O'Brien was 83 years of age. Is there a danger that the state will simply allow time to close this case?
Well, I'm sad to say, Kira, they seem to be waiting it out. The state, I mean, they seem to be waiting it out, letting these men die, basically, and the case die with them. It already has happened where Brian McNally was concerned. Brian McNally was 83 when he died. But Oscar and Nicky are still have enough energy to fight this, and they've been doing it consistently for the last almost 50 years, and there's no sign that they're going to relent. I mean, there was a very big concert in Vicar Street there in April. About basically the impetus up behind it was a call for a public inquiry into what happened in Salons or a result in Salons case. And participants included people like Christy Moore, who was very active too in Nicky's case when Nicky was in jail in Port Leisha back in the early 1980s. So people haven't forgotten.
In terms of the heavy gang, Patsy, were there ever any charges brought against any of the Gardaí involved in that heavy gang for their treatment of people in custody?
None. Absolutely none. And I mean, prominent individuals who had gained something of a public profile subsequently, like Gerry O'Carroll, who died in 2024, stood by everything that they did, denied that they did anything wrong in any context. And he was the man, basically, who was centrally involved in the Joanne Hayes confession to a murder she couldn't possibly have done. It's been proved forensically and otherwise since then, or her mother, or her brothers. But they just, when questioned about it, those of them that did go public, and he's the only one that I'm aware of who did, because he had a column in the Evening Herald, denied that they did anything wrong whatsoever.
All right, Patsy, thank you so much for being with us here on News Talk Daily today.
You're very welcome, Ciara.
Always a pleasure. Until tomorrow morning, take care. Bye-bye.